Cloudcast Media.
Welcome to Your Next Mission Podcast with the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley. Proudly presented by Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans.
Hello out there, veterans and families, and welcome to Your Next Mission Podcast, a program initiative of the American Freedom Foundation. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and your host. I love saying that every time. We have a great show. In fact, we have a wonderful show for you today. We're going to focus on the Veterans Treatment Court. I bet you probably most of you have never heard of that. Also, I have a couple of stories for you, including one from our guest, Colonel D.J. Riaz, on how he handled his transition. Now, before we get started, I want to thank our presenting sponsors, Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans for making Your Next Mission happen. They love, and there's no question about that, they love our veterans and families. As I mentioned, today's theme about is about the Veterans Treatment Court, and I'm so excited to introduce Colonel D.J. Riaz, Senior Mentor Program Coordinator, that's a mouthful right there, for the Veterans Treatment Court in the 13th Judicial District of Hillsborough County, Florida, and a Colonel, U.S. Army, retired. Welcome, sir. Glad to have you on the podcast.
Hey, Sergeant Major Tilley, thank you so much, and to Ted Hacker for having me as your guest. I'm excited to be here.
Well, thank you very much. Sir, I know the audience is eager to learn all about the Veterans Treatment Court, but before we do that, can you, they always want to know a little bit about you. Can you tell us, not a little bit, but a lot about you? Can you tell us some stuff about you?
Sure. Real quickly, I'll try to really condense it. So, like many probably in your listening audience, I too was an Army brat, a proud Army brat. My dad was a Korean War and Vietnam War veteran, and that really informed me and drove me a lot to joining the military myself. I got commissioned with an ROTC scholarship out from the University of Notre Dame, where I graduated from, and then I proceeded to serve around almost 33 years of service. I specialized in military intelligence and special operations in all of my deployments, especially later on once 9/11 hit. Like many, I had quite a few tours in and out of the sandbox. When I retired in 2013, I did a short stint at US SOCOM as the National Security Agency signals intelligence representative. But then I left that job after a year because I felt I needed to do more, and specifically with community service and giving back. And so long story short, I found out about the Veterans Treatment Court that had not even started yet here in Tampa. And we're going to talk more about that. But through that, I was able to become a part of that great treatment program. So I do a lot of that here with veterans in our community, but I also focus on two other social causes, and that is with my wife, helping the disabled and the special needs kids, especially those in the military, the Exceptional Family Member Program. So we're very involved in that. We have kids, and one of them is special needs. So that's why we got involved in that. And then recently, as of about a year and a half ago, I became very involved here in Tampa with anti-human trafficking operations. That's a big problem, not only here in Florida, but nationwide and of course, globally. And so the reason why I've gotten involved in these three areas, of veterans, the handicapped special needs, and human trafficked youth especially, is that I feel that we need to give back as good citizens, and we need to lend a voice to those oftentimes that don't have a voice.
Yeah.
Right. So that's pretty it in a nutshell.
No, I tell you what, I wish everybody did exactly what you did. Cause it's, you can see it's, I always tell people it's not what you have, it's what you do with what you have. And so what you're doing is making a difference, and God bless you for that. Tell us all about, exactly what the Veterans Treatment Court is, and tell us a little bit about the history.
Absolutely. So the Veterans Treatment Court actually was originated in 2008 out in Buffalo, New York, with the Honorable Robert Russell, who just retired, actually. He just retired earlier this year. And basically, the premise of it was this. There are veterans, military folks, who have committed crimes. And but at first glance, you can't really tell really the genesis of it or the causes of it. But it came upon this judge to actually look a little deeper into the causes instead of just arresting and then putting criminal defendants, in this case, veterans, into jail or to prison. And what they found out was this, that there were things in the past of many of the veterans, oftentimes due to combat or traumatic situations, which may have directly or indirectly impacted on subsequent criminal behavior. That's basically the premise. So from that grew the Veterans Treatment Court in Buffalo, New York. Let me fast forward to today, 2021. There are over 550 of these courts in over 47 states. Here in Florida, I believe we are the state with the most veteran treatment courts. Of a 67 county state, we have at least 34 operational veteran treatment courts. So we're very proud of that, but we still got a ways to go because that's about 50% or so. Yep. So we need to, we aspire to get 100% of the Veterans Treatment Court. But the Veterans Treatment Court is, the other aspect of it is it's set in a criminal court setting, but it is a hybrid court in that, I mean that it combines the best of diversionary court, mental health court, and drug court. And the reason why is because empirical evidence has shown that the veterans who get in trouble with the law oftentimes are as a result of something involving mental health, which includes PTSD and TBI, traumatic brain injury, mm-hmm. or substance or alcohol abuse. And so because of that, the Veterans Treatment Court has partnered with the mental health courts and the drug courts. And we'll, as we talk later with funding, I'll get more into that in a little bit more detail. They've been able to take the best of all those courts and make it into one, what is known as problem-solving court. That is a court that is focused not on punishment, but on treatment and rehabilitation so we can get our veterans better again, more contributing, impactful citizens to our society, and put less of a strain on our law enforcement and our judiciary systems.
Yeah, you know, it's all the time he was talking, I was listening to stuff, and hopefully the audience is really tuning into this because I, for myself, I remember coming back from, where I was coming from, and it was hard for me to fit in. And I know a couple of times I got angry and I did something and I couldn't stop myself and I got into something and all of a sudden I tried to get out of it and you can't get out of it. And so I know exactly what you're talking about. That's for sure. Is this a national program?
Okay, that's a very interesting question, Sergeant Major, because the answer is yes and no. It's a national program in that it has proliferated and spread, but yet it is not a national centralized program in that all 50 U.S. state judicial systems and U.S. territories that have EDCs operate from their respective state laws.
Yeah.
Now, there are principles of the VTC as enacted by the National Association of Drug Court Professionals, the NADCP, that we follow, kind of like the principles of war.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the techniques are per each state. So every VTC looks similar, but they're nuanced.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the one thing about that, it's all about lessons learned. If you have a great program, share your information. So I know you talked about with me a little while ago about you're trying to sort of pull all the people in Florida together. So you talk on the same, you know, same level and you're all helping each other. And really the bottom line, you're helping veterans and families. And that's the key to success. How does it, you know, I think I can answer this question, but it's a question, how do you really become eligible to get in the veterans program?
Okay, so if you're talking in terms of being a defendant coming in versus a volunteer.
I think the question is for both of them.
Okay, great. Yeah. Okay, super. So let me take the defendant first. So again, it's all dependent on state law. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to talk from the perspective of Florida, which I can because I work a lot with Florida state law and with the FDVA and with the legislature. So here in Florida, there's what's known as an eligibility requirement and an admissibility requirement. Two parts, I'll cover it. So eligibility is basically driven by Florida law. First piece is you have to be defined by Florida law as a veteran, quote, unquote, veteran. Now, I can tell you without having the law in front of me, it's very broad. Basically, if you've served a day in uniform, You're
a veteran. Yeah.
You're a veteran. Mm-hmm. So, which is good because we want to make eligible as many as we can. Okay. The second thing is the qualified offense. There are certain offenses by statute that are not allowed in the Veterans Treatment Court. You can well imagine they're pretty much your capital offenses and your first degree felonies for serious, heinous crimes. Otherwise, most offenses are eligible. And I can tell you in Hillsborough County, we actually have taken cases up to second degree felony, nonviolent. Mm-hmm. We've taken them into our court. So that's the second requirement. Here's the third, and this one's very important. Somewhere in military service, that veteran who had subsequently committed a crime through diagnosis, oftentimes using the VA, we can determine that there was some condition, disability, or disorder that occurred to that or that person suffered while in military service. Doesn't have to be combat, had to have been in military service. That's part one. Part two of this is the current law says it does. You do not have to have that nexus between that identified disability or disorder and the crime that was committed. All we have to show is that something happened to that veteran, something bad happened during their time in military service. And that's enough for us for a connection down the road with an eligible offense to then say, you know what, this person is eligible for consideration into the VTC. Now that's the eligibility piece. There's a part two, which is the admissibility piece. That piece, the simplest way to explain that is this, it's a balancing test. The judge with the state attorney and the public defender or the private defense looks at the eligibility piece and checks the block and says, okay, the person is eligible. Now, in the balancing of interest, what's in the best interest of our society, for safety of our society, versus the wellness of the veteran, the ability of the veteran to get better, the veteran's willingness to get better, and the resources in your community to provide the necessary services. The judge weighs all that.
Yeah.
Right now, the current law is the judge holds that final discretionary authority to make that call. And so that's where we are currently. So that's
a VTC judge, the Veterans Court.
That's the VTC judge.
And,
yes,
and just to tell our audience, that judge is a retired or either active duty officer, judge in the military. Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. So Judge Shante is our third judge that we've had, but I can tell you he's an active reservist. Mm-hmm. He's a lieutenant colonel mm-hmm. in the Army Reserve, a JAG officer. And in fact, just a little side note, he was a captain at the time and the JAG advisor to one of my best friends, who you may even know as well, Sergeant Major, then Colonel Tommy Pappas, who was commanding the MI Brigade in Baghdad during the surge.
I do know
during the invasion in 2003.
Yeah, I do know him. Yep.
Yeah. So it's fortuitous we end up together. The first judge, Lieutenant Colonel retired Richard Weiss, who's still an active judge, but not the VTC judge, also U.S. Army reservist, retired Lieutenant Colonel as a JAG. And then the second judge, the Judge Greg Holder. So Greg Holder, now he's off the bench. He's finally fully retired. But West Point grad, did 29 years in the United States Air Force, was a former SJA at U.S. SOCOM headquarters. Mm-hmm. So you can see not only the experience on the bench, but the ability for the jurist to have empathy and understand the military culture. And that's one of the things that's really important.
Yeah. Let me ask you a quick question. Because as you was talking, I was listening to all this stuff. What about if before the Veterans Court system started, what if you have a veteran that's in prison? Do you ever go back in prison and try to look and see if there's people there that qualify for the Veterans Court system?
So a very, very interesting question. I have to kind of answer it this way. So here in Hillsborough County, Sheriff Chad Cronister has what's known as the Vet Pod program. Mm-hmm. These are veterans that have been identified as veterans, but for whatever reason are not qualified to come into the Veterans Treatment Court. But through a partnership with our community resources, such as USF Medical Center and other local community services and counseling services, he's been able to build a coalition partnership where they actually come into the jail and actually work with those veterans to try to help them, because they're not otherwise coming into the Veterans Treatment Court. But to go back really to the first part of your question, I don't know of any program or system in which the judicial system was actively looking for veterans. I don't think it really happened.
You know, that may be something, and we're going to go on here a minute, but that may be something you ought to think about, because there's probably people that we've missed, because there's always somebody that slips through the crack, that gets in trouble, that we can't help. We're talking with Colonel DJ Reyes. I love saying that. DJ is a great one. About the Veterans Treatment Court, and you're listening to Your Next Mission podcast with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major Army, and I'd like to focus this part of our discussion on how the VTC benefits the veterans and really the community. And can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, how does it benefit the community that you're living in?
Okay, so here's what our belief is. It is better to identify an underlying cause or disorder or disability which could have contributed to subsequent criminal behavior, try to treat it, rehabilitate it, and get that person, in this case a veteran, get them well again and get them reintegrated back, yeah, not only with their community, but with their spouses, their loved ones, and their families. So first, it's veteran wellness. It's, hey, we sent these folks oftentimes to combat. They rose their right hand and they swore to support and defend the Constitution. Okay, so they served. Okay, so this is not a handout. This is a hand up. We're trying to help our veterans. Okay. So veteran wellness. But then from a financial and from a practical perspective, think about the fact that when they come into our system, we don't then put them back into jail. They're in the community, but we wrap our arms around them with what's known as the VTC team. So you got the judge and counsel overseeing, you've got the VA involved, through the Veteran Justice Outreach Representatives, who are our LNOs to the court from the VA that are actually in court with us, that actually work with the veterans. We've got the Department of Corrections or the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office, probation officers that are working. We got, of course, the senior mentors, that's a huge piece, yeah, of this program. The secret sauce, as Judge Russell always loves to say, the mentors are the secret sauce of the program that makes it work. And so when you have all of that combined, you've got a lot of love and caring. You got a lot of back in the day where the soldier, sailor, airman, marine was back in the service, and they had their first sergeant or sergeant major or their platoon sergeant or their platoon leader. They had somebody harping on them. They had somebody doing the bed checks on them. They had, you know, first formation, you know, failure to report. They had all of that. That's what we actually bring back. It's this mindset. And 85 to 90%, because that's our success rate.
Yeah.
It resonates. They get it.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I listened to one session of the Veterans Court, it was really interesting. I thought you had about 30 people in there talking, you know, trying to help one young man or one young woman. What kind of impact are you really having in Hillsborough County? Are you having an impact in Hillsborough?
I'd like to brag on our program. We're having
I don't blame you.
We're having a tremendous program. I mean, we're at about 90 to 92% success rate. So those that come into our program, 90 to 92% actually graduate, they move on. I will just share as a side note with you, it's so impactful with many of these veteran graduates. Most of them I actually keep in contact with on social media. Yeah. I've helped them. They want the counseling still. I've had folks ask me anything from, you know, job interview techniques to write me a letter of recommendation to meet them in the park, to meet their family, have a coffee with them. I mean, I even have one veteran who he graduated and I mentored, and he's a really good electrician. And after he graduated, he came over and hooked up the generators for me and Judge Holder and a whole bunch of other folks at a price. We paid him, of course. We didn't take advantage of it. But he said, hey, I want to do this. You guys saved me in my life. And so I want to give back to you guys. Yeah, that's just one example.
I want to ask you a quick question before we take a break. There's males and females in the program, correct? Can you tell me what the percentage is?
Yeah. I can't give a precise percentage, but I would tell you it's, of course, there's way more males than there are females. Mm-hmm. So probably, you know, 5 to 1, maybe 7 to 1.
What about ages? Where's the age range? The age range?
Our ages really range. We've had Vietnam War veterans, old veterans with old problems that were never resolved.
Yeah.
All the way up to the current wars and conflicts that we're facing right now.
Yeah.
So let me share this one thing with you before you go on break. So we deal with four major types of disorders. This is what I've seen anecdotally. I've seen PTSD, traumatic brain injury, opioid and substance abuse, and military sexual trauma. And what I've seen in the military sexual trauma, it's predominantly females, even though we've had one or two males that have come through with that. And what I've also seen is this, comorbid, which are combined disorders. If you get a female that comes in with MST, 10 out of 10 times she has PTSD.
Yeah.
So that's normally, we see that. And then for that, we also see drug and alcohol or opioid abuse, because a lot of them try to self-cope. They try to self-medicate to take care of their problems. Again, gets back to the military culture many times of, I'm strong, I'm not weak, I don't need help, I'm not going to ask for help, I need to suck it up, I need to be, you know, I need to be strong on this. And that is a mindset change that we have to work with many of our veterans, that it's okay to ask for help.
Yeah, no, it's funny. All the way through my military, as you talk, I think of myself, and everybody always thinks about themselves, but I think about the fact that I never asked for help when I had issues. Just what you just said, I always try to work through those issues, especially as a senior NCO or a senior officer. You don't want to ask for help. You think it'll affect your promotions, whatever. But I tell the audience, there's always somebody out there to help you. You know, this is a part of a family. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Your Next Mission Podcast.
This Your Next Mission podcast is made possible by The Cavalry Agency. They help brands dominate no matter their size. Ideas, strategy, action. This is Cavalry. Learn more at cavalry.com. Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Purdue Global, providing affordable online education for hardworking adults. Learn more about a personalized, innovative, and world-class education at PurdueGlobal.edu. Veterans United Home Loans, the number one VA lender for five straight years. If you're buying, they're funding your dreams. Learn more at VeteransUnited.com.
Welcome back. I'm the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Telly, and we're blessed to be here today with Colonel DJ Riaz. In fact, I think most of the time you go by just DJ, but I'm going to make sure I got that Colonel in there. We're at one of my favorite parts of the podcast where we get to hear from one of our veterans about the transition. And we're lucky today to have a veteran DJ with us today. And can you tell us about your transition, maybe some advice to our listeners about, you know, how do they get ready to get out of the military?
Oh boy.
This will be a long one.
No, it won't. It won't.
You're helping a lot of people. You got some good point. Tell us what it is.
I do. It's just my mind works like 100 miles an hour. And I'm trying to cram 100 pounds in a 25 pound small Alice right now. Yeah. So, but basically, if there's any phrase that I could use, and I just, because I give a lot of different types of these types of presentations to transitioning veterans, it's this for your viewing audience. Find your tribe. For me, and I'll just tell you, after 33 years coming out of Afghanistan, I finished off at SOCOM headquarters. I was lucky. I had a soft landing because I had worked for NS, the National Security Agency, before I actually commanded one of their commands. The director said, we want you to be at then Admiral McRaven, who was the commander, his singing advisor. So would you take this job? It's an easy job. You don't have to interview. You're good to go. I'm like, absolutely. I live in South Tampa, right off of Bayshore Boulevard, right near the base. Everything's good. Life is good. Okay. About 10 months into that, I said, I can't take it anymore. I just can't take it anymore. And I was miserable. And my wife would tell me, she said, you're miserable. You shouldn't be. Your mate, you got a good job, good pay, your retirement pay. We're close to the base. Everything's all good, but you are miserable. She goes, you know, the only time I see you when you're not miserable is when you're deployed.
That's true. Yeah.
And which is kind of a perverse kind of way of putting it. And I told her, I said, sweetheart, it's not because of, you know, that I don't care about you or the kids. Not at all. I said, it's just, I don't know how to, I just don't know how to put it. You know, all your life you're in the military, and all your life you're training, 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 because, you know, you want to get in the game. It's the Super Bowl. You want to get in the game. And then when 9/11 happened, I mean, it was horrific that it happened. Nobody wants that to happen. But we saw ourselves in this next phase where now we had continuous deployments over and over and over. And I found myself kind of like in that pipeline, and part of me hated it and part of me loved it. I'm not going to lie to you. And as much as it sucked at times, it sucked, but I was with the right people. I was with people I really cared about and I loved. And even to this day, I still communicate with them. We still talk on the phone or do LinkedIn or whatever. So my wife said, okay, well, then you need to quit. We got to figure it out, but you got to quit and find something else better to do. And I go, I don't know what else to do. I only had like one job in my life, the United States Army, basically. And so long story short, I had to do introspection. And basically I said, okay, what is it that brings me joy? And I'm not going to worry about the money piece. I'll make sure financially we're okay for a little while, but I have to find my way. And what I found was this: I really loved commanding. I really loved being a commander because I got to lead troops. I felt like a mayor at times. I had to deal with all the problems with the spouses and the kids and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I liked it. It's all part of being a commander. And I said, you know, I got to find some sort of community service where I can do that. And so what I did was I first set up a consulting company with my wife based on what we've been doing as volunteers, and that is helping other families navigate through the TRICARE system, especially those with special needs kids, because we have one ourselves. So my wife said, why don't you just set up a consulting? So I did, long story short. And for the next 5 or so years, I had several corporate type clients, marketed myself, said, hey, you want to bridge over to the DOD contract? You want to learn about the military? You want to try to tap in on the military audience? Okay, I'm your Navajo scout. I'm your guy. I'm your TERP. So that's what happened. So I did that. I left my job. I did the consulting. And it was fine. It wasn't like I wasn't making a lot of money, but it just scratched the itch. But then I found out about the Veterans Treatment Court, and it mesmerized me when I saw it on TV. And then that just, oh my God, that's another segment, another interview. But that started that in 2013, and that just grew legs, and now it's a Frankenstein.
Well, go ahead, sir. Yeah.
Okay, so to answer your question, Sergeant Major, while I was in the court and I was helping to build it and develop it, I had to look for other guys and gals like me to help with the mentor program. What I was doing was I was just building the force again. I was just doing .mil PF. That's all I was doing. And to this day, that's all I did. And when I did it, I realized I started building a chain of command. I have a line and block chart on my desk, which actually shows our task force heads and then the line mentors. And then I got my support staff. It's all, you know, and my civilian friends, God bless them. I brief it to them and they were like, DJ, this is like revolutionary. This is like, oh my God. And I would look at them like, dude, you need to go in the Army. You need to just like go to basic training or something, or go to OBC and, you know, become a leader, a platoon leader. You're going to learn all this stuff like in real time.
No, it's really, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking about myself. It takes a while to figure out what you want to do and where you fit in at. And you've got to do, you know, life's too short. You got to do what's right for you and your family. And again, God bless you for what you're doing. I want all our listeners to reach out to me directly. Tell us about your transition. Tell us about what topics you'd like us to cover. I mean, we'll cover anything that you want to cover on this podcast because we want to help. There's no question about that. You can call or text me at 844-424-1134, and I'll reach out to you. I'll actually call you back or send me an email at smantilly@yournextmission.org. Okay, let's pick it up where we left off. You're listening to Your Next Mission Podcast, and I'm Jack Tilly, 12th Sergeant Major Army. We're talking with Colonel DJ Reyes, Senior Mentor Program Coordinator for the Veterans Treatment Court in the 13th Judicial District of Hillsborough County. And really, we're heading into our final segment with you and today, and I can't tell you, I've had a great time, and I hope that you have. Just talking to you, you've educated me a whole lot about your program. But, sir, would you talk a little bit about the mentor program and the VC and how that somehow might, if somebody wants to volunteer for the veteran mentor program, how would they do that?
Absolutely. Okay. So, the best way, and I'll specifically address the listening audience for those that are here in Hillsborough County. The best way is to access our website, We have our own website for the VTC mentors. It is www.hillsborough county mentors.org. And on that website, it lays everything out about the VTC and the mentor program and what we do. And then there's a drop box where you can contact me. Any inquiries, any comments will come directly to my Gmail. So you can write directly to me. Now, for those that are outside of Hillsborough County, I assure you, all you have to do is Google Veteran Streaming Court for your respective county or circuit court. And if you don't find Veteran Streaming Court, it will be listed under Problem Solving Court. Just get there online. You can Google it, and then there'll be points of contact. If you're having a hard time, and even if you're in another state, if you're listening to this, feel free to contact me. Trust me, because I talk to VTC coordinators throughout the nation. And chances are, wherever you're at, I can help you out to hook up to become a mentor. Now, the general requirements for a mentor basically are that you're a veteran or active duty. You could be retired, a veteran, or active duty. We have an additional requirement here in Hillsborough County, and that is the volunteers who are veterans like me, you have to submit your DD-214 to show your discharge papers to indicate that you had an honorable discharge. Unlike the defendants that come in that may have other than honorable discharges for admission into the program, we require our mentors to all have honorable discharges.
Yeah.
But that's really about it. Otherwise, every program runs itself. And like you mentioned earlier, Sergeant Major, the coalition of Florida senior mentors that I just established, now we're sharing things like this with my counterparts in Tallahassee, Jacksonville, Miami-Dade, Orlando, Nassau, Clay, and soon to be Pensacola.
Is there a specific rank that you got to have to come into the program to be a mentor?
No, not at all. Now, I will tell you, one of the things we look at, and I have a mentor assessment and training and selection board, and it's made up of my senior mentors, okay, that run the teams. And so what we're looking at when we evaluate and then train, and then we put them before a board, kind of like an old promotion board, when we're asking them questions and we're testing their knowledge and all that, one of the criteria that we use, it's not an eliminator, but it's a desirable, is we do look in their military background and we look at what, if any, type of leadership that they've had. So for instance, the lowest rank, I'm trying to remember, the lowest rank line level mentor I think I have was a veteran, Army veteran, and she was an E3. So she didn't really have any leadership. However, when she got out of the military and with the stuff that she's doing in the community, she actually has leadership roles. Yeah. So we take that into consideration. And plus, she supports a lot of our veteran service organizations. But no ranks. But I can tell you generally, at least for Florida, for Hillsborough County, I'm looking at pretty much the range is normally E5 to O6 that I'm seeing. And from Vietnam War all the way to the current conflicts. So you can, and we have all demographics, all ethnicities, all races. I mean, we truly are diverse and inclusive. We need to mention this. We have two special advisors. I keep these two in my hip pocket. One is a triple amputee, a Marine that got injured in Helmand Province. And he lives here in Tampa. I use him very sparingly, only for hard cases of a similar nature. And then the other special advisor I have is a retired service member. And she represents our LGBTQ community. That actually worked because a few years ago, I actually had a Panhandle County VTC program coordinator contact me with a similar issue, with a problem with one of their veterans. And they reached out to me because they knew that I had a pretty diverse program. And they said, do you have any kind of mentor that could counsel or provide support in any way in this particular type of situation? And I did. Yeah. And I talked to the judge at the time and he said, yeah, do it off the grid. You guys just work it offline. And we did. We did it off the grid. Here's the bottom line. We saved that veteran from possibly committing suicide.
Oh my goodness. Well, God bless you for that. Sir, what are some of the concerns that the VTC directly or indirectly addresses once a veteran really enters the program?
Well, the main thing is once we identify and diagnose a condition, the whole purpose for that treatment court is to treat, rehabilitate, and then reintegrate them back into the community with the hopes that they won't come back into the criminal justice system. So in the case of the underlying disabilities that I mentioned to you and the listening audience earlier, all effort, and specifically the lion's share of it, is from the VA. In this case, James Haley for Tampa. And then we do have some that go to Bay Pines across the Bay. The whole focus and effort is on the medical treatment, therapies, and counselings to get these veterans well again. And we put them through quite a bit. They go through quite a bit of treatment, alternative therapies, counselings. They got a lot of appointments.
There you go. Sir, we're going to sort of wrap it up now. You got any final thoughts, anything you want to share that you've covered a lot of information, really a lot of valuable information, but is there anything else you want to cover?
Yeah, I do. Several things real quickly. I want to share a few years ago, actually within the first 3 years of our program, we had a graduation with a veteran and his wife and his kid in attendance. After he graduated and after the comments were made, they walked by me. I shook the veteran's hand, and then the wife walked by me. And then as she walked by me, after about a couple steps, she stopped, she turned around, she looked at me, she had the baby. She gave the baby back to her husband, the veteran who just graduated. She came up to me and she hugged me. But what she did was she whispered in my ear. And this is what she said to me. She said, "Thank you for giving me my husband back to me."
Wow.
And I got to tell you, that stopped me in my tracks.
Had a cry.
And well, it's hard just to even talk about it. I get choked up about it. But I got to tell you, that underscores the program. That's what this program's about. We're trying to bring them back home again.
Yeah. And a lot of people, and not to say anybody that's listening don't really understand, but a lot of people that has not served, they don't really understand. It's a different issue. It's just really tough. And I just, not just for me, but really from all the people, hopefully, that are listening to us today. Sir, I want to thank you for what you do and what you continue to do. There's so many people that talk about helping people, but, they don't do a whole lot. And I always like to say that it's not what you have, it's what you do with what you have. And what you're doing is you're making a difference. So I want to thank you, Colonel DJ Reyes. I like just calling you DJ, but I want to thank you for being on the podcast. It's hard for me to say that. I'm all Army, I guess, all soldier, all veteran. It's hard for me to say just DJ, but golly. I mean, you're doing a heck of a job. And for those veterans that are listening out there, and don't forget, we're all in this together. I'm Jack Attilly, 12th Sergeant Major Army, and you've been listening to Your Next Mission podcast. And thank you for listening today. Please visit our website at yournextmission.org and leave me a review. Hopefully it's a good review. And hopefully the Colonel helped me out here a little bit. You can also visit our partners there who can provide you with so many services that will assist you in your transition from the military. Also, please visit our corporate partners and see all the jobs they have available. Please know that... we're just not talking about this. We want to help you. Please follow us on the social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And again, thanks again, Colonel DJ Reyes, for being with us today. You've had a heck of an impact on a lot of people. It was just great having you on the podcast. And don't forget, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message or send me a text at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. I want to end each podcast with a little story about me and my experiences in the Army. But I think today, I think the Colonel covered it all. But I would tell you that when I was a kid, I was a troubled youth. And I've said this before in a podcast. And I spent a lot of time in reform school. And a lot of things weren't going right. I didn't have anybody like the Veterans Court. And of course, the Veterans Court would help me then. But I didn't have anything like the Veterans Court that reached out and sort of mentored me and developed me and helped me really how to grow up and be a man. And so when you see something like that, when you see a veteran that's out there that needs some help or assistance, or you see something like the Veterans Court, I mean, you don't have to be a veteran to help. Go and see what you can do to help them, whether or not it's with with money or just time. Time is so precious for all of us. And do all you can to help because, you know, this is the greatest country in the world. And we have a lot of great people that are doing a lot of great things. And sometimes, just like Colonel Reyes, we don't hear about all the things that are going on. We have a tendency to talk about the negative things, unfortunately, but there's a lot of good things that are happening. And there's a lot of good people that want to make a difference. So again, Colonel Reyes, God bless you. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. And I want to thanks to Cloudcast Media and, of course, our four presenting sponsors, Calvary Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, and Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans. We appreciate all you do and continue to do for our veterans. See you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.
Cloudcast Media.